Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio. Hello, listeners. How are you? You are about to listen to I'm Just Saying with Carla G and David Claxton. Hello, David.
Hello, Carla. How are you doing this morning? Well, I guess it's afternoon for you now, right?
It is afternoon for me. It absolutely is. Hey, David, hold on 1 second. I got to take a swig of water.
Okay, okay.
It's important.
That's okay.
That's good.
Very nice, very nice.
How rude and silly is that?
Did you get some water for me, too?
Oh, you want me to get some for you, too? I can do that. Let me do that real quick. Hold on.
No, I'm good. How was your weekend, Miss Carla G? How was your weekend?
Oh, the weekend was great. You know, I was a little concerned about you. Hadn't heard from you, David. But anyway.
I know. I had a good weekend, good Easter weekend. How was your Easter? Did you go on an Easter egg hunt?
Did not go on an Easter egg hunt. I went on a David Claxton hunt. Don't act like you don't know what I'm talking about.
Oh, I'm acting, all right. I'm acting, baby. That's right, I'm acting.
It's pretty good. I like that little segue. And our listeners will definitely know what we're talking about. But you mentioned acting, so let me just get right into this. In a few minutes, I'm hoping that we're going to be joined by a great actor, and I love to say a great friend of mine, thank you very much, Ernie Hudson. Ernie Hudson is coming on board with us tonight, or today. As you know, his notable role is that of Winston Zeddemore in Ghostbusters.
I got to tell you, I absolutely love that movie. When it came out, I was a teenager. I was about 13, 14 years old, and that movie was just awesome.
Yeah.
I loved it. I mean, the special effects back then were amazing back then in the 80s, you know?
Yes, indeed. It's just one of the fun all-time movies that we've all seen and had fun with. You know, I'm right there with you. And
mm-hmm.
you know, to this day, I mean, that's one of their little catchphrase, you know, who are you going to call, Ghostbusters? I mean, that is still one of the famous movie quotes that everybody remembers. Young or old alike, we all remember, who are you going to call, Ghostbusters?
Of course. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that was the best line of the whole movie, I think. That was the one line that everybody remembers to this day, you know?
This is true. One of another role that that a lot of people remember Ernie in was The Hand That Rocks the Cradle. And,
oh, yeah.
I, you know what, the character name slips me right at the moment, but he played the part of, how do we say, challenged individual? Is that what he was?
Yeah.
Did you see The Hand
That
Rocks the Cradle?
Yeah. Oh,
you know.
I love that. That is an awesome movie. That's one of my favorite movies. As far as suspense thriller movies, I think that one is one of the best.
Mm-hmm.
One of the best.
Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Lately, you know, he's been making appearances on, or he's had recent appearances on Desperate Housewives.
Uh-huh.
He's on a series now. I believe the network is ABC Family. But it's called The Secret Life of the American Teenager. And he plays a psychologist, I believe, psychiatrist. I'm sorry, Ernie, if I'm not getting this precise. But that's a pretty good drama. It's nice to, you know, I think it does a really good job of capturing teenagers. Not that I necessarily know a whole lot of them personally.
Not that you necessarily want to know a whole gang of teenagers, you know, or have them in your life necessarily, right?
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But in recent years, you know, I used to be surrounded by a lot of teenagers and preteens. I worked actually at a music conservatory. And while these are kids who have things to do, you know, they're studying
mm-hmm.
music, so they're not necessarily delinquent types. they're still teenagers. So there's a lot of giggling going on, a lot of just whispering and girls acting like little girls and boys acting like little boys. And, you know, you could detect the hormones rising and all that kind of stuff. And it's
well, you know, you were a teenager once. I was a teenager once, you know, and you got to admit, I know that, you know, you're a little more straight laced than some of your teenagers today, but a little bit. But I mean, you giggled and you like checked out boys and stuff like that, too. Right. I'm sure.
Sure. Well,
right.
You know what, David? Yes, I did. But you know what? You know what's very interesting to me is how you, the straight-laced of them all, dare, has the audacity to talk about how straight-laced I'm.
I, you know what? That's what's interesting is that you look at someone on the exterior, they look to be one way, but when you really get to know them, watch out, baby. Watch out. Because I'm not as, let's put it this way, I'm not as conservative in some areas of your life as you would think I should be. You know,
some areas of my life?
Of my life. You know, I say your meaning in general, a person's life. You know, but,
okay.
So I'm not as conservative as you would think I should be in my life as you know.
Well, you know what, David? You know what I love to do? I love to cut you off. And I'm going to cut you off right now because we are going to be joined by Mr. Ernie Hudson as soon as I say, hello, Ernie.
Well, hello, Miss Carla. How are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm excellent, actually. I'm wonderful. I'm good. And how are you?
I'm good. Glad to hear it. Thanks so much for joining us here on I'm Just Saying with Carla G. and David Claxton. And I don't think the two of you have met. Ernie, we have another voice you'll be hearing. That is the voice of David Claxton.
It's not just a voice, Carla. There's a body attached to the voice. I, you know. Anyways, Ernie, how are you?
I'm doing fine, man, and glad to have you got a body attached there. So,
Carla,
it's good to hear.
Carla, I love Carla because she makes it sound like. It's just a voice out in cyberspace somewhere, and it happens to be called David Claxton. But,
right.
Well, and based on the comment just before we just brought you in, Ernie, apparently there's definitely a whole lot more to David than what meets the eye. You know, he's evidently got some sort of a risque background going on there. I don't know.
I don't. That's another show. But at any rate,
I just heard I'm not as conservative as you might. I caught that part. So.
Oh, there you go. Well, anyway.
Go ahead, Carla. Go ahead.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I thought we would just go ahead and just. Head right into this, again, Ernie, I just want to thank you for coming on, because I know you are in the middle of a really hectic schedule. You are on Broadway in a play called Joe Turner's Come and Gone. And what I didn't realize is that you guys are actually starting this week.
Yeah, we open on Thursday. We've been in previews for about 3 weeks now, and our opening is on Thursday, and it's pretty exciting, and Broadway is an incredible place to be for an actor. I've done a lot of things, but this is a very special place, and it's starting to be fun now. Up until this point, it's been a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, now that you're all kind of settled in and you know your parts and where you're going to go and, you know, the mechanics are down, you're feeling the groove now.
Yeah, I think we're learning each other. I mean, it's a wonderful cast, and you know, it takes a while to sort of figure each other out and go through the whole emotional and political politics and all that stuff. But sooner or later, you gel into a family. And August Wilson is an incredible writer. In fact, I would say certainly as a playwright, our most preeminent. Black writer, and I think one of the greatest, definitely one of, and I possibly say the greatest writer, American writer. I mean, he's an extraordinary writer. He wrote a scope of 10 plays chronicling the 20th century and about the African-American experience. It's pretty remarkable. He passed away a few years ago, but his work is amazing, and I really encourage anybody, if you get a chance to see an August Wilson play, you definitely should do it.
Right. And this is part of, is this an annual event, I think, with the Circle of Plays? I'm really not sure what they call it, but I know it's either from, town to town, or I don't know. Do you know what I'm talking
about?
Well,
you know, once a playwright has sort of reached the stage that August did before he passed away, there's a Broadway theater. In fact, the first Broadway theater named after an African-American was named after him. And he, but once the plays are out there, they're done all over the country. In Washington, D.C., they did a series of all 10 plays. A
yeah.
number of theaters have done, you know, different series of his work. This is the a revival. The play was done on Broadway in the 90s, and Lincoln Center, mm-hmm. which is, you know, Lincoln Center, you know, ballet arts, the whole thing, but they're presenting this piece.
Right.
And it's the first time, there's a little controversy over it because there's a white director, and August was very adamant about not allowing white directors to direct his work
mm-hmm.
Because he felt they didn't really understand the experience. And so Bartlett Scheer, who's a multiple Tony Award winner director, he's has a couple of plays on Broadway now that he's won awards for. And so he's directing this, and I think a very different perspective and view of the work is
right.
being presented, and the audiences are responding incredibly well. And at the end of the day, after 8 weeks of rehearsal and previews, I must say I think it's a pretty good production.
Great.
You know, Ernie, one thing I want to say about, I just want to interject about Broadway. I go to New York a lot, just because
right.
I love New York City, and as an actor, I appreciate New York City for serious actors that are there.
Right. Right.
And I appreciate Broadway so much. In fact, about a year ago, on one of my trips to New York, I was standing there on, I passed by a line of people on 43rd Street, you know, and it was pouring rain outside, you know, I mean, people are standing in line for Phantom of the Opera, and I thought to myself, you know, New York is the only place, I think, in the world, maybe, that people will stand out in the pouring rain
mm-hmm.
waiting to go see a play.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I really think that that's one of the few places that people truly appreciate plays, and specifically Broadway, you know. So.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there's London and there are different stages around the world, but certainly in the United States, Broadway is it's show business. I mean, it's show. And I've done plays for over 40 years, and but doing this play on Broadway, it's a whole other level. And I see why it's Broadway, because even though we previewed, which meant we opened the play over 3 weeks ago, we're still rehearsing every day trying to make it better up until we actually open. So
mm-hmm.
it's a whole other level. And I just have a lot of appreciation and respect for the people who do it, because it really is a job.
And
mm-hmm.
it was, you would say, it's certainly more grueling than, more grueling than movies or TV. Yes?
Well,
uh-huh.
well, I think so. But movies and TV can be grueling in a very different way. You know, you're on location. I shot up, in fact, on my one day off a few weeks ago, I flew up to Vancouver to shoot a movie called Smoking Aces. And, you know, we got there. I got to town. I finally got to the hotel at 3 a.m. They picked me up at 5 a.m.,
mm-hmm.
For a wardrobe fitting, because they hadn't had a chance to meet me. We were on the set at 7 a.m. It was freezing cold in Vancouver. The rain was turning to snow. We were shooting outside. They had smoke machines. And we worked up until it was time for me to fly out that night. My flight was leaving at 10, and we worked up until I had to be rushed to the airport. So that's kind of grueling, you know, but it's a
yeah.
different way. Once we get the scene done or the scene's complete, then that's it. But
right.
with Broadway, we're revisiting, we're deepening, we're looking, we're searching, we're, you know, you're dreaming about it, you wake up in the middle of the night, you have an idea, and you get a chance to come to the work fresh, you know, with a different perspective. Whereas in movies, you know, once those scenes are laid down, they're down, that's it, it's over. So it's a different kind of work. And in a movie, I can work on a movie for 3 months and maybe only work 8 days.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with Broadway, when they say we're working 6 days a week, we're working 6 days a week.
Right.
And I do eight shows a week here. We do two shows on Wednesday, two shows on Saturday, and every night.
Yeah.
And it's different, I guess is all I can say. It's different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, too, you know, well, I'm not the actor that you two are, but, you know, I've done a little bit of acting in my life. And I know, the theater, of course, there is just an entirely different type of an energy. And a lot of times it may sound cliche. You hear people talking about, well, you know, you get that immediate reaction. But there's
right.
just something about that, wouldn't you say? Just something about that audience sitting right there and
feeling
their energy. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think also it's in the moment. And, I mean, you can't in the middle of it say, you know what, stop. Let me do this over again. No, I don't feel good today. And let's do another take. And, you know, with movies, you can do it as many times as you need. The audience will only see the one time that
right.
they use. And so, and it can make some really bad actors look pretty good.
Yeah.
But on Broadway, it's on. The show is, you know, we're on. And if you go up on lines or you don't know where you are or you're just having a bad day, it's like, man, it ain't, you know, who cares? It's not about that. You know, it's showtime. And,
right.
Well, you know, speaking to that, I always say, I feel that if you can make it on Broadway, I mean, if you can do theater, you know, any
yeah.
kind of theater, I feel like if you can do that, then you can pretty much do anything because, I mean, you've got to remember lines, you've got to remember, you know, where you're supposed to be on the stage at any given time.
Right.
You know, it's a lot. You gotta work that in conjunction with your costuming, you know,
right.
and remember
yeah.
what
yeah.
you're wearing and how that affects the play. So I really think, man, I think if you can do that, you can, because you're right, with acting on television and film, you know, I mean, a lot of that can be touched up, airbrushed, however you want to call it. You know, it can
right.
it can be tweaked afterwards.
Right, right,
right.
Yes,
right.
Yes. Yeah. In fact, I think most performances are really made in the editing room. You know, you got a lot of takes, you're making choices or whatever. But there is something about movie work, especially TV to a lesser degree, that requires a certain kind of internal presence that I think the theater doesn't necessarily demand. In the theater, you're projecting, you're reaching out to that last role. In film, there's something, the camera is right inside. The camera is
mm-hmm.
so close. And and for a lot of theater actors, they don't know how to make that transition. And they,
right.
they don't do well in film, and even with TV, they're a little bigger than the screen that they're playing with. And so how you internalize that,
right.
it's a talent. And some people are very, very good at it, and some people... I was talking to James Earl Jones once, and he was saying it's something that he's never really been able to command. I mean, he's beyond extraordinary on stage, and in film, it's just a little. It's a difference, and some people are just born. You know, the Brad Pitts, they're born for the screen.
Right.
But you know, it's and I'm sure he'd be good in theater, but he's made for that little box and or that big screen, I guess, in terms of movies. But
yeah.
It is different, and I don't, you know, underestimate, you know, being able to do that because it's worth. It's more valuable than gold. I mean, to be able to capture that essence that the
mm-hmm.
camera can do.
Mm-hmm.
Ernie, do you have a particular movie, like a movie that you would say that was one of your favorite movies to have worked on? Is there a preference?
Well, you know, I've been very fortunate in my career to do a lot of different things. I've worked TV, I've worked, you know, stage, I've worked film, and probably if I look at my film career, I like working on The Hand That Rocks the Cradle for a number of reasons. It was a character that I normally wouldn't get a chance to play, and it wasn't a threat to any of the other actors because sometimes male lead actors have their issues and. And so part of your job is letting them know that you're here for the movie and not to necessarily make them look bad or steal the scene or any of that stuff. But I like The Hand That Rocks the Cradle, and I like the work I did in Congo, which was kind of an odd movie, but I love the character. And I did a movie called Clover that I really enjoyed that character because me finally get a chance to do the quote unquote leading man thing, which I've never really had a lot of opportunities to play. And but it's all, at the end of the day, it's the same amount of work. Somebody was telling me, isn't it wonderful being on Broadway? And I go, I don't see the difference in working here and then working in Minneapolis or anyplace else. The work is the work. I mean, it's
right.
It's you still gotta show up. You still gotta, whether you get paid $1 million or you get paid $1,000, you still gotta bring your best game.
Yeah.
Which is something that I've heard from another actor, Samuel L. Jackson, and I know his wife, LaTanya Richardson Jackson,
yeah,
is also in this with you. Yeah.
Yeah, she's in it with me. You work with people who you don't know, and I had never met her before, but she's a wonderful actress, been on Broadway several times, and has done a lot of theater work, and not known as well in film, but certainly her husband is known.
Right.
And but I love her so much. She's wonderful. She's wonderful, amazing in the play, and she plays my wife, and I just really, and she's so down to earth, and just that earth mother, you know, thing about her that I just, I really appreciate. I'm so happy that she's a part of this production, because like I said, when you're dealing with a cast, you got all these different personalities, and it's nice to have someone who's balanced, and she certainly is grounded, and she knows who she is, and she's confident in her work. There's the other side of actors. When they're not confident with their work, they become difficult in other areas, so she's good.
Yeah.
I'm sure it can make for sort of like a nervous set. Let me just throw this in here for those who are just joining us. You're listening to I'm Just Saying with Carla G and David Claxton, and we are talking with the lovable Ernie Hudson. We've actually got about 8 more minutes left in the show. So real quick, Ernie, if you want to just tell us, the character you're playing is Seth Holly, I believe, in...
Yeah, play. The name of the show is Joe Turner's Come and Gone. Seth Holly is, it's about one of the, sort of, not boarding house, I'm not quite sure, it's a guy who has a home, him and his wife, and they take, you know, people who are traveling. It's about the migration from the south to the north.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd rent a room. There's a boarding house. You rent a room for a couple of bucks a week or whatever. And so Seth owns the house, and he sort of tries to maintain a certain control, a certain, you know, respectability about his home. And and these various people come up, and they stay at his place. And so it's kind of their story, which is sort of all of our stories. And it's really about how we've been scattered and torn apart. There's a character named Loomis in the play that's played by Chad Coleman. And Chad is that guy who's just sort of lost his way. He's been, after slavery, there was a thing that they did where people who were just sort of migrating, traveling through a town, would be arrested and with some trumped-up charge and sent to prison gangs. And he was held for 7 years in one of those situations and torn from his family, and he's trying to put himself together. So in a strange way, it's about, you know, the crucifixion. It's about the rebirth. It's about us finding our feet, because as a people, we've had a difficult time coming together and standing. So it's all those greater things, but it's about these people. And so, and I'm the guy who they all come through to find the place. And then there's a wonderful actor who was on the original Kojak series, Roger Robinson, who's done mostly theater, a lot of Broadway plays. And Roger is that that seer, that I'm not sure what to call him, who guides this man to find himself. So
yeah, he's sort of got that... That inner eye, that he can kind of see where to direct people.
You know, I was going to say, in light of the play that you're participating in, that you're acting in, Ernie, I got to say that it sounds like the theme or the storyline, the plot behind the play, it's very timely. You know, it's very timely in light of the times that we're living in with Obama coming into office and everything. So it's kind of a, you know, whereas that gentleman, the man in the play, his name was Loomis, I think it was.
Right. Yes.
And he's reconnecting with his past and with his family and so forth.
Right.
There's a lot of us in the African-American community that need to really reconnect with not only ourselves, but our past and our family and our community, you know, and therefore if we do that, then I think, you know, we'll be more united and be able to accomplish more things as a team sort of, or as a family.
Absolutely, and I think the Obamas, I mean, certainly represent that. And what we know, because for so many years, and certainly through the 60s and 70s, so many of us were trying to look to Africa and try to become what we thought we were once. But the truth is, you know, we've come through this transatlantic crossing and slavery and all the stuff that we've, and we emerge as a different people, a new person.
Yeah, because you can never be that again, what you were 400 years ago. You know,
And you can't deny all these things that happened, but you can't let that define who you are, because we're all greater than that. And that's the whole, a lot of the people who would tell me or talk about Christ's crucifixion, but they focus on the crucifixion as opposed to the resurrection. And it's about the resurrection. And I think it's about us now moving. It's a new day, and as opposed to just focusing on all the harm that was done. Certainly it was done, but out of that we emerge anew.
Yeah. Now, we've got about a minute and a half, Ernie, and but I just kind of want to piggyback on this. I know, again, because you and I, we're friends, and we've talked about this sort of thing. We've been looking at and talking about the Course in Miracles, and I was wondering, you know, are you feeling any sort of a correlation between the Course in Miracles and this, how this play is affecting you and your life and, you know?
Well, you know, I think The Course in Miracles is the greatest book I've ever written. I think it's one of the greatest books ever written. It's an amazing, and I'm a student of that, and it really helps me keep my balance and to really focus on the love as opposed to the fear. And I don't think I'd be able to do what I do if it wasn't for The Course in Miracles. I mean, certainly before I was introduced to The Course, but do it with the peace of mind that I bring to my life now. And so it's just extraordinary. And all of this experience I find in The Course, and certainly, you know, there is no theme, certainly the play, that I can't, that isn't dealt with, I think, in The Course in Miracles. I think for anybody who hasn't read it, I really strongly recommend it.
Mm-hmm. This was written, but this is not Abraham Hicks's book, is it?
No, Abraham Hicks.
I have it, but I don't remember. Who is it?
Yeah, no, it's, I can't think of the lady's name who wrote it. But she doesn't actually own the book. She doesn't even take, Helen Schuchman,
yes.
S-H-U-C-H-M-A-N, I think. But she doesn't take credit for writing it. She felt that it was channeled through her, and... And when I read the book, it's hard to imagine any single person being able to do that. And it is extraordinary, and I appreciate the fact that it's there.
Yeah. Well,
Ernie,
you know what I'd like
to
do? Oh, actually, yeah, we've got less than a minute to go. So what I want to do, I'm hoping, Ernie, that we can get you back on the show and really maybe talk more about, well, hopefully the play is still going on and we can check in on that, but also just get you back on and talk about The Course in Miracles and how that's, how exciting that is for you and what significance it has for the world.
Absolutely. You know, Carla, we've known each other for some time. I really love and appreciate you and all the things that you do and all the things you're putting together. And so anytime that you want me to visit and hang out with you guys, all you have to do is ask. I'd be more than happy. I'd be honored because I really, really respect and appreciate you. Really.
Thank you very much, Ernie. Thanks so much for saying that. Back at you. And with that, I'm going to let you go, but I'm also going to just... remind everybody that they can catch Ernie Hudson. For those of you who are in New York and visiting New York, you can catch Ernie Hudson on Broadway at the Lincoln Center. Actually, you can go online at www.lct.org to find out more information. David, thank you for being
thank
here
you.
Today. And
thank
joining
you, Ernie, for joining us, by the way.
Yes.
And he's gone.
No
problem. Thought he was okay. No problem.
He's gone.
You've
been listening
Carla.
To I'm Just Saying with Carla G. and David Claxton. Everybody, you guys, take care.
Bye-bye.